This is Audible.
Brilliance Audio presents the unabridged recording of Shadow Fever by Karen Marie Manning, performed by Natalie Ross and Phil Gigante. For the Irrepressible M. Part 1. Between the idea and the reality, between the motion and the act, falls the shadow. T.S. Eliot.
I feel it deep within. It's just beneath the skin. I must confess that I feel like a monster. Skillet. Monster. You wish to know me. Posit yourself as the pinpoint center of one of your kaleidoscopes, and grasp time as the colorful fragments erupting from you in a multitude of dimensions, that constantly expand outward in an ever-widening, ever-shifting, infinite array. See that you can choose and expand from any of those uncountable dimensions, and that with each choice, those dimensions widen and shift again. Infinity compounded exponentially. Understand that there is no such thing as reality, the false god your race worships with such blind devotion. Reality implies a single possible. You accuse me of illusion. You, with your absurd construct of linear time, you fashion for yourself a prison of watches, clocks, and calendars. You rattle bars forged of hours and days, but you've padlocked the door with past, present, and future. Puny minds need puny caves. You cannot gaze upon time's true face any more than you can behold mine. To apprehend yourself as the center, to simultaneously perceive all combinations of all possibles, should you choose to move in any direction. Direction being a very limited method of attempting to convey a concept for which your race has no word. That is what it is to be me.
Conversations with the Shisadu. 1. Hope strengthens. Fear kills. Someone really smart told me that once. Every time I think I'm getting wiser, more in control of my actions, I go slamming into a situation that makes me excruciatingly aware that all I've succeeded in doing is swapping one set of delusions for a more elaborate, attractive set of delusions. That's me, the queen of self-deception. I hate myself right now, more than I'd ever have thought possible. I squat on the cliff's edge, screaming, cursing the day I was born, wishing my biological mother had drowned me at birth. Life is too hard, too much to handle. Nobody told me there'd be days like these. How could nobody tell me there'd be days like these? How could they let me grow up like that, happy and pink and stupid? The pain I feel is worse than anything the Shisadu has ever done to me. At least when the book is crushing me, I know it's not my own fault. This moment, mea culpa, beginning to end, all the way, I own this one. And there will never be any hiding from that fact. I thought I'd lost everything. How ignorant I was. He warned me. I had so much more to lose. I want to die. It's the only way to stop the pain. Months ago, on a hellishly long night in a grotto beneath the burn, I wanted to die too, but it wasn't the same. Malouche was going to torture me to death, and dying was the only chance I had of denying him that twisted pleasure. My death had been inevitable. I saw little point in drawing it out. I'd been wrong. I'd given up hope and nearly died because of it. I would have died if not for Jericho Barons. He's the one who taught me those words. That simple adage is master of every situation, every choice. Each morning we wake up, we get to choose between hope and fear and apply one of those emotions to everything we do. Do we greet the things that come our way with joy or suspicion? Hope strengthens. Not once did I permit myself to feel any hope about the person lying face down in a pool of blood. Not once did I use it to strengthen our bond. I let the onus of our relationship rest on broader shoulders. Fear, suspicion, mistrust drove my every action. And now it's too late to take any of it back. I stop screaming and begin to laugh. I hear the madness in it. I don't care. My spear sticks up, a cruel javelin mocking me. I remember stealing it. For a moment, I'm back in the dark, rain-slicked Dublin streets, descending into the sewer systems with Barons, breaking into Rocky O'Banion's private cache of religious artifacts. Barons is wearing jeans and a black T-shirt. Muscles ripple in his body as he casts aside the sewer lid with the ease of a man tossing a frisbee in the park. He's disturbingly sexual, to men and women alike, in a way that sets your teeth on edge. With Barons, you aren't sure if you're going to get fucked or turned inside out and left a new, unrecognizable person, adrift with no moorings on a sea with no bottom and no rules. I was never immune to him. There were merely degrees of denial. My respite is too brief. The memory vanishes, and I am again confronted with the reality that threatens to shatter my hold on sanity. Fear kills. Literally. I can't say it. I can't think it. I can't begin to absorb it. I hug my knees and rock. Jericho Barons is dead. He lies on his stomach, motionless. He hasn't moved or breathed in the small eternity that I've been screaming. I can't sense him in his skin. On all other occasions, I've been able to feel him in my vicinity, electric, larger than life, vastness crammed into a tiny container, genie in a bottle. That's Barons. Deadly power, stopper corking it. Barely. I rock back and forth. The million-dollar question. What are you, Barons? His answer on those rare occasions he gave one was always the same. The one that will never let you die. I believed him. Damn him. Well, you screwed up, Barons. I'm alone and I'm in serious trouble, so get up! He doesn't move. There's too much blood. I reach out with my she-seer senses. I sense nothing on the cliff's edge but me. I scream. No wonder he told me never to call the number on my cell that he had programmed as IYD, if you're dying, unless I really was. After a time, I begin to laugh again. He's not the one who screwed up. I am. Was I played, or did I orchestrate this fiasco all by myself? I thought Barons was invincible. I keep waiting for him to move. Roll over, sit up, magically heal. Cut me one of those hard looks and say, "Get a grip, Miss Lane. I'm the Unseelie King. I can't die." That was one of my biggest fears whenever I was indulging in any of a thousand about him, that he was the one who'd created the Shisadu to begin with, dumping all his evil into it, and he wanted it back for some reason but couldn't trap it himself. At one point or another, I'd considered everything. Fae, half-fae, werewolf, vampire, ancient cursed being from the dawn of time, perhaps the very thing he and Christian had tried to summon on Halloween at Castle Keltar. Key part there being immortal, as in unkillable. Get up, Barons! I scream, move, damn you! I'm afraid to touch him. Afraid if I do, his body will be cooling noticeably. I feel the fragility of his flesh, the mortality of Barons. Fragility, mortality, and Barons all packed together in the same thought feels about as blasphemous as stalking through the Vatican hammering upside-down crosses on the walls. I squat 10 paces from his body. I stay back, because if I get close, I'll have to roll him over and look in his eyes. And what if they're empty like Alina's were? Then I'll know he's gone, like I knew she was gone. too far beyond my reach to ever hear my voice again, to hear me say, I'm sorry, Alina. I wish I'd called more often. I wish I'd heard the truth beneath our vapid sister talk. I wish I'd come to Dublin and fought beside you or raged at you because you were acting from fear too, Alina, not hope at all. Or you would have trusted me to help you. Or maybe just apologize, Barons, for being too young to have my priorities refined like you. Because I haven't suffered whatever the hell it is you suffered, and then shove you up against a wall and kiss you until you can't breathe. Do what I wanted to do the first day I saw you there in your bloody damn bookstore. Disturb you like you disturbed me. Make you see me. Make you want me. Pink me. Shatter your self-control. Bring you crashing to your knees in front of me, even though I told myself I'd never want a man like you, that you were too old, too carnal, more animal than man, with one foot in the swamp and no desire to come all the way out, when the truth was that I was terrified by what you made me feel. It wasn't what guys make girls feel, dreams of a future with babies and picket fences, but frantic, hard, raw loss of self, like you can't live without that man inside you, around you, with you all the time, and it only matters what he thinks of you. The rest of the world can go to hell, and even then I knew you could change me. Who wants to be around someone that can change them? Too much power to let another person have. It was easier to fight you than admit that I had undiscovered places inside me that hungered for things that weren't accepted in any kind of world I knew. And the worst of it is that you woke me up from my Barbie girl world. And now I'm here, and I'm wide awake, you bastard. I couldn't be more awake, and you left me. I think I'll scream until he gets up. He was the one who told me not to believe anything was dead until I burned it, poked around in its ashes, then waited a day or two to see if anything rose from them. Surely I'm not supposed to burn him. I don't think there are any circumstances under which I could do that. I'll squat. I'll scream. He'll get up. He hates it when I'm melodramatic. While I wait for him to revive, I listen for sounds of scrabbling at the cliff's edge. I half expect Riordan to drag his broken, bloody body up over the edge. Maybe he's not really dead either. After all, we are in Faerie, maybe, or at least within the Silvers. Who knows what realm this is? Might the water here have rejuvenating powers? Should I try to get Barons to it? Maybe we're in the dreaming, and this terrible thing that has happened is a nightmare, and I'll wake up on a couch in Barons' books and baubles, and the illustrious, infuriating owner will raise a brow and give me that look. I'll say something pithy, and life will be lovely, chock full of monsters and rain again, just the way I like it. I squat. No scrabbling in the stones and shale. The man with the spear in his back doesn't move. My heart is full of holes. He gave his life for me. Barons gave his life for me. My self-serving, arrogant, constant jackass was the constant rock beneath my feet, willing to die so I could live. Why the hell would he do that? How do I live with that? A terrible thought occurs to me. So awful that for a few moments it eclipses my grief. I would never have killed him if Riordan hadn't appeared. Did Riordan set me up? Did he come here to kill Barons, who was never invincible, merely difficult to kill? Maybe Barons could be killed only in his animal form, and Riordan knew he'd have to be in it to protect me. Was this an elaborate ruse that had nothing to do with me? Was Riordan working with the LM, and they wanted Barons out of the way so I'd be easier to deal with, and the abduction of my parents was mere sleight of hand? Look over there while we kill the man who threatens us all. Or maybe Barons had been cursed to live out some hellish sentence and could be slain only by someone he trusted, and he trusted me. Beneath all the cold arrogance, the mockery, the constant pushing, had he given over that most private part of himself to me? A confidence I'd never earned, as I couldn't have proven any more surely than if I'd stabbed him in the back. Oh, gee, wait, I did. On Riordan's word alone, I'd turned on him. The accusation of betrayal in the beast's gaze hadn't been an illusion. It had been Jericho Barron's in there, staring at me from behind that prehistoric brow, baring his fangs, reproach and hatred blazing in his feral yellow eyes. I'd broken our unspoken pact. He'd been my guardian demon, and I'd killed him. Had he despised me for not seeing through the hide of the beast he'd worn to the man within? See me. How many times had he said that to me? See me when you look at me. When it mattered most, I'd been blind. He'd been dogging my every step, treating me with that characteristic Baron's combination of aggression and animal possessiveness, and I'd never once recognized him. I'd failed him. He'd come to me in a barbaric, inhuman form to keep me alive. He'd set himself up as IYD regardless of what it might cost him, knowing he would be turned into a mindless, raging beast capable only of slaughtering everything in his immediate vicinity, but for one thing. Me. God, that look! I cover my face with my hands, but the image won't go away. Beast and Barons. His dark skin and exotic face, its slate hide and primal features. Those ancient eyes that saw so much and asked only to be seen in return burn with scorn.
Couldn't you have trusted me just once? Couldn't you have hoped for the best just once? Why did you choose Riordan over me? I was keeping you alive. I had a plan. Did I ever let you down?
I didn't know it was you! I gouge my palms with my nails. They bleed for a brief moment, then heal. But the beast Barons, in my mind, isn't done torturing me.
You should have. I took your sweater. I smelled you and granted you passage. I killed fresh, tender meat for you. I pissed around you. I showed you in this form as in any other. Then you are mine, and I take care of what is mine.
Tears blind me. I double over. It hurts so bad I can't breathe, can't move. I hunch over, curl in on myself, and rock. Beyond the pain, if there is such a place, I know things. Things like, according to Riordan, if he's not a traitor, and if he is and somehow still alive, I'll kill him as dead as we kill Barons. I have a brand on the back of my skull placed there by the Lord Master, who probably still has my parents, because Barons is here. So obviously he never got through to Ashford. Unless time passes differently in the Silvers, and he did have time to get to Ashford before I punched IYD, summoning him here to the seventh dimension I've been in since entering the Lord Master's slippery pink corridor back in Dublin. I have no idea how long I was in the Hall of All Days, or how much time passed in the real world while I sunned with Christian by the lake. Once, courtesy of Valaine, I spent a single afternoon on a beach in Faerie, with an illusion of my sister, and it cost me an entire month in the human world. When I returned, Barons was furious. He'd chained me to a beam in his garage. I'd been wearing a hot pink string bikini. We fought. I closed my eyes and embraced the memory. He stands there, furious, surrounded by needles and dyes about to tattoo me, or more accurately, pretend to tattoo me where he's already tattooed me, but I haven't discovered it yet. So he can track me if I ever decide to do something as stupid as agree to stay in Faerie for any period of time again. I tell him if he tattoos me, we're through. I accuse him of never feeling anything more than greed and mockery, being incapable of love. I call him a mercenary, blame him for losing his temper when he couldn't find me and trashing the store. And while I scathingly concede that he might get an occasional hard-on, it's undoubtedly for something like money, an artifact, or a book. Never a woman. I remember every word of his reply.
Yes, I have loved, Miss Lane, and although it's none of your business, I have lost many things. And no, I am not like any other player in this game, and I will never be like Valaine, and I get a hard-on a great deal more often than occasionally. Sometimes it's over a spoiled little girl, not a woman at all. And yes, I trashed the bookstore when I couldn't find you. You'll have to choose a new bedroom, too. And I'm sorry your pretty little world got all screwed up, but everybody's does, and you go on. It's how you go on that defines you.
In retrospect, I see through myself with pathetic ease. There I am, chained to a beam, nearly naked, alone with Jericho Barons, a man who is so far beyond my comprehension. But God, he excites me. He plans to work slowly and carefully on my naked skin for hours. His hard, tattooed body is an unspoken promise of initiation into a secret world where I could feel things I can't begin to imagine. And I want him to work on me for hours. Desperately. But not to tattoo me. I goad him to the best of my naive, sheltered abilities. I want him to take from me what I lack the courage to offer. What a complicated, ridiculous, self-destructive feeling. Afraid to ask for what I want? Afraid to own up to my own desires? Driven by circumscription of nurture, not nature. I'd come to Dublin wearing shackles on my bonds. I'd been all nurture. He was all nature, trying to teach me to change. Like I said, degrees of denial. He'd leaned into me in that garage, sex and barely leashed violence, and when I'd felt his hard-on, it made me feel so alive and wild inside that later I'd had to peel off my bikini and take care of myself in the shower again and again, fantasizing a very different outcome in his garage, one that had taken all night. I'd told myself it was because I'd spent the day in close proximity to a death by sex fae. Another lie. He'd unchained me and let me go. If I were chained to that beam now, I'd have no problem telling him exactly what I wanted. And it wouldn't involve unchaining me. At least not at first. I focused through my tears. Grass. Trees. Him. He lies face down. I need to go to him. The earth is wet, muddy from last night's rain, from his blood. I need to clean him. He shouldn't be messy. Barons doesn't like to be messy. He's meticulous, a sophisticated, exquisite dresser. Although I've straightened his lapel a few times, it was only for the excuse of touching him. Stepping into his personal space, exercising familiarity to underscore that I had the right. Unpredictable as a hungry lion, he might be feared by everyone else, but he never ripped out my throat. Only licked me. And if his tongue was a little rough sometimes, it was worth it to walk beside the king of the jungle. My heart is going to explode. I can't do this. I just went through this with my sister. Regret upon regret. Missed opportunities, bad decisions, grief. How many more people will have to die before I learn how to live? He was right. I'm a walking catastrophe. I fumble in my pocket for my phone. First thing I do is dial Baron's cell. The call doesn't go through. I press IYCGM. Call doesn't go through. I hit IYD and hold my breath, watching Barons intently. The call doesn't go through. Like the man himself, all lines are down. I begin to shake. I don't know why, but the fact that the cell phones don't work convinces me more than anything else that he's beyond my reach. I flip my head down, scrape my hair forward, and although it takes me a few tries to get the angle right, I take a shot of my nape. Sure enough, two tattoos. Baron's brand is a dragon with a Z in the center that shimmers with faint iridescence. To the left of his tattoo is a black circle crammed with strange symbols I don't recognize. It seems Riordan was telling the truth. If the tattoo was put there by the LM, it explains a lot. Why Baron so heavily warded the basement where he dragged me back from being Prior. How the LM found me at the Abbey once the wards had been painted over. How he found me again at the house Danny and I squatted in. And how he tracked me to my parents in Ashford. I pull out the small dirk I lifted from BB&B. My hand trembles. I could end my pain. I could curl up and bleed out next to him. It'd be over so quickly. Maybe I'd get another chance some other time, some other place. Maybe he and I would be reincarnated, like in that movie, What Dreams May Come, that Alina and I hated so much because the kids and husband died, then the wife committed suicide. I love that movie now. I get it. The whole idea of willingly going to hell for someone. Living there, insane if you have to, because you'd rather be insane with them than endure life without them. I stare at the blade. He died so I would live. Damn you! I don't want to live without you!
It's how you go on that defines you.
Oh, shut up, would you? You're dead. Shut up. Shut up. But a terrible truth is shredding my heart. I'm the girl that cried wolf. I'm the one that pressed IYD. I'm the one that didn't think I could survive the boar on my own. And guess what? I did. I'd driven it away and already been safe by the time Barons appeared and blasted into it. I hadn't really been dying after all. He died for me, and it hadn't been necessary. I overreacted, and now he's dead. I stare at the dirk. Killing myself would be a reward. I deserve only punishment. I stare at the snapshot of the back of my head. If the Lord Master found me right now, I'm not sure I would fight for my life. I consider attempting surgery on my own skull, then realize I am not in the best frame of mind for that. I might not stop cutting. It's close to my spinal column. Easy way out. I slam the blade into the dirt before I can turn it on myself. What would that make of me? That I got him killed, then killed myself? A coward. But it's not what it would make of me that bothers me. It's what it would make of him. A wasted death. The death of a man like him deserves more than that. I bite back another scream. It's trapped inside me now, stuffed down into my belly, burning the back of my throat, making it painful to swallow. I hear it in my ears, even though my mouth makes no sound. It's a silent scream, the worst kind. I lived with this once before, to keep Mom and Dad from knowing that Alina's death was killing me, too. I know what comes next, and I know it's going to be worse than the last time. That I'm going to be worse. Much, much worse. I remember the scenes of slaughter Baron showed me in his mind. I understand them now. Understand what might drive a person to it. I kneel beside his naked, bloody body. The transformation from man to beast must have shredded his clothing, exploded the silver cuff from his wrist. Nearly two-thirds of his body is inked with black and crimson protection runes. Jericho, I say. Jericho, Jericho, Jericho. Why did I ever begrudge him his name? Barons was a stone wall I erected between us, and if a hairline fracture appeared, I hastily mortared it with fear. I close my eyes and steel myself. When I open them, I wrap both hands around the spear and try to pull it from his back. It doesn't come out. It's lodged in bone. I have to fight for it. I stop. I start again. I weep. He doesn't move. I can do this. I can. I work the spear free. After a long moment, I roll him over. If there was any doubt in my mind that he was dead, it vanishes. His eyes are open. They are empty. Jericho Barrens is no longer there. I open my senses to the world around me. I can't feel him at all. I am on this cliff, alone. I've never been so alone. I try everything I can think of to bring him back to life. I remember the unseelie flesh we crammed into my backpack what seems a lifetime ago, back in the bookstore when I was getting ready to face the Lord Master. Most of it is still there. If only I'd known then what I know now, that the next time I saw Jericho Barrens, he'd be dead. That the last words I would ever hear him say were, "And the Lamborghini," with that wolf smile and promise that he would always be at my back, breathing down it, keeping it covered. The wriggling, chopped-up rhino boy flesh is still neatly trapped in baby food jars. I force it between his swollen, bloodied lips and hold his mouth shut. When it crawls out the jagged gash in his neck, my trapped scream nearly deafens me. I'm not thinking clearly. Panic and grief ride me. Barrens would say,
"Useless emotions, Ms. Lane, rise above them. Stop reacting and act."
There he is, talking to me again. What wouldn't I do for him? Nothing is too disgusting, too barbaric. This is Barrens. I want him whole again. Riordan had flayed him from gut to chest before he slit his throat. I carefully peel back the meat of his tattooed abdomen and stuff Unseelie into his exposed, sliced stomach. It crawls out. I consider trying to sew the stomach up, so his body would be forced to digest the flesh of the Dark Fae, and wonder if it would work. But I lack needle, thread, or any other means of repairing his torn flesh. I attempt to put his entrails back into his body, arrange them in some semblance of order, dimly aware that this is perhaps not a normal, sane thing to do. Once he said, "Get inside me. See how deep you can go." With my hands on his spleen, I think, here I am. Too little, too late. I use my newfound proficiency in voice and command him to rise. He told me once that student and teacher develop immunity to each other. I'm almost relieved. I was afraid voice might raise a zombie, reanimated but not truly revived. I prop his mouth open with a stick, slit my wrist and drip blood into it. I have to slice deep to get a few drops and keep slicing because I keep healing. It only makes him bloodier. I search my she-seer place for magic to heal him. I have nothing of such consequence inside me. I am suddenly furious. How could he be mortal? How dare he be mortal? He never told me he was mortal. If I'd known, I might have treated him differently. Get up! Get up! Get up! I shout. His eyes are still open. I hate that they're open and so empty and blank. But closing them would be an admission, an acceptance I don't have in me. I will never close Jericho Barrens' eyes. They were wide open in life. He would want them open in death. Rituals would be wasted on him. Wherever Barrens is, he would laugh if I tried something as mundane as a funeral. Too small for such a large man. Put him in a box? Never. Bury him? Oh, no way. Burn him? That, too, would be acceptance. Admission that he was dead. Never gonna happen. Even in death, he looks indomitable. His big black and crimson tattooed body, an epic giant, felled in battle. I settle on the ground, gently lift his head, maneuver my legs beneath it, and cradle his face in my arms. With my shirt and hot tears that won't stop falling, I bathe away dirt and blood and clean him tenderly. Harsh, forbidding, beautiful face. I touch it, trace it with my fingers over and over until I know the subtlest nuances of every plane and angle, until I could carve it out of stone even if I were blind. I kiss him. I lie down and stretch out next to him. I press my body to his and hold on. I hold him like I never permitted myself to hold him when he was alive. I tell him all the things I never said. For a time, I have no idea where he ends and I begin. The Danny Daily. 91 Days AWC. Get your shade busters. Read all about it. Yep, you heard me right. The feckers can be killed. Brought to you by the Danny Daily, your only source for all the news AWC. After the wall crash, morons. I ain't gonna keep spelling things out for you. The Danny Mega O'Malley Shadebuster. One chunk unsealy flesh. Fuse. Flash powder. Use only pyrotechnic industry standard mix. Do not use chlorate or sulfur. Highly unstable. Take it from me. I know what I'm talking about. Make cherry bomb. Pack in center of flesh. Run fuse. Mold unsealy flesh into round shape for easier rolling. Corner shade. Roll in shade buster and cover your ears. The feckers are cannibals. Watch shade devour snack and disintegrate when the bomb explodes inside it. If it eats light, it dies. Caveats. Kids under 14 do not do this without help. Ain't gonna do nobody no good if you blow your hands off. We need you in this fight. Be cool. Smart is the new cool. You gotta be fast. If you find a specially bad nest, write down the address of it on the Danny Daily. Stick it on the wall inside the GPO. O'Connell Street, Dublin 1, and I'll take care of it for you. They don't call me Mega for nothing. Do not use sulfur. It makes the mix way unstable. I'm still growing back my eyebrows and nose hair. Times the cherry bomb blows before the shade eats it. Some of them are stupid enough to eat the next one you throw in. Legal disclaimer. The Danny Daily, TDD, LLC, and affiliates are not responsible for collateral blast damage or injury. Two. It's funny the things people say when someone dies. He's in a better place. How do you know that? Life goes on. That's supposed to comfort me. I'm excruciatingly aware that life goes on. It hurts every damned second. How lovely to know it's going to continue like this. Thank you for reminding me. Time heals. No, it doesn't. At best, time is the great leveler, sweeping us all into coffins. We find ways to distract ourselves from the pain. Time is neither scalpel nor bandage. It is indifferent. Scar tissue isn't a good thing. It's merely the wounds of the face. I live with the specter of Alina every day. Now I will live with Baron's ghost, too. Walk between them, one on my right, one on my left. They will talk to me incessantly. I'll never escape, bridged between my greatest failures. The day is cooling by the time I'm able to force myself to move. I know what that means. It means night is about to come slamming down on me with the finality of steel shutters on the glass facade of an upscale shop in a rundown neighborhood. I try to disentangle myself from him. I don't want to. It takes half a dozen attempts to make myself sit up. My head aches from crying. My throat burns from screaming. When I sit up, only the shell of my body moves. My heart is still lying on the ground next to Jericho Barron's. It beats one more time, then stops. Peace at last. I cross my legs beneath me and stiffly push myself up. I stand like I'm 100 years old, creaking in every bone. If the Lord Master is hunting me, I've sat on this cliff's edge for a dangerously long time. The Lord Master, Darok, leader of the Dark Fae, bastard that tore down the walls on Halloween and turned the unseelie hordes loose on my world. The son of a bitch that started it all, seduced and either killed Alina or got her killed, had me raped by the Unseelie princes, lobotomized and turned into a helpless slave, abducted my parents and forced me into the Silvers, and drove me to this cliff's edge, where I murdered barons. If not for one ex-fae, hell-bent on regaining his lost grace and exacting retribution, none of this would have happened. Revenge will never be enough. Revenge would be over too quickly. It wouldn't satisfy the complexity of the needs of the creature I became while I was lying here holding him. I want it all back. Everything that was taken from me. A geyser of rage explodes in me, seeping into all the nooks and crannies my grief occupies. I welcome it, encourage it, genuflect to my new god. I baptize myself in its steaming, hissing fury. I give myself over. Claim me. Take me. Own me. I am yours. She-Seer is only a few letters away from Banshee, my birth country's harbinger of death, that shrieking mythic creature driven by fury. I seek that dark glassy lake in my mind. I stand on the black pebbled beach. Runes float on the shiny ebon surface, glistening with power. I bend, trail my fingers through the black water, scoop up two fistfuls, and offer the bottomless lock a deep bow of gratitude. It's my friend. I know that now. It has always been. My fury is too vast for nooks and crannies. I don't try to contain it. I let it build into a dark, dangerous melody. I throw my head back, making room for it as it rises. It swells, blasts up my throat, puffs out my cheeks. When it erupts from my lips, it's an inhuman cry that soars above the trees, rips into the air, and shatters the tranquility of the forest. Wolves startle awake in their dens, howling in mournful chorus. Boars squeal, and creatures I cannot name scream. Our concert is deafening. The temperature drops and the forest around me is abruptly encased in a thick silvery coating of ice, from smallest blade of grass to highest bough. Birds flash freeze and die, beaks parted, feeding their babies. Squirrels ice mid-leap and drop like stones to the ground where they shatter. I glance at my hands. They are stained black, my palms cup silvery runes. I know now where Barons ends and I begin. When Barons ended, I began. Me, Mac O'Connor. She-Seer that a certain Seelie prince said the world should fear. I kneel and kiss Barons a final time. I do not cover him or perform any ritual. It would be for me, not him. There is only one thing left that I will do for me. Soon, none of this will matter anyway. I had to be ripped in half to stop feeling so torn in two, divided, never knowing who to trust. I'm now a woman with a single ambition. I know exactly what I'm going to do, and I know how I'm going to do it. Three. After leaving Baron's body, I travel in the direction my guardian demon had been herding me. I believe he must have wanted me to go this way for a reason. I trust him in death like I never did in life. What a piece of work I am. I follow the river for miles. As he disappears behind me, so too do I. With each step I take, I strip off another piece of myself. The weak parts. The parts that won't help me accomplish my goals. And if they are the so-called human parts, oh well. I can't feel and still survive what I've got to get through. When I am certain I am ready, I stop and wait for my enemy. He does not disappoint. I thought you'd never get here, I say, my voice husky from screaming. It hurts to talk. I savor the pain. It's what I deserve. The LM is still some distance away, concealed in the forest, but I see the shadows that move too sinuously to be cast by any tree. Come out! I lean back against a tree, one hand in a pocket at my cocked hip, the other at my waist. I am what you want, aren't I? What you came here for? What all this is about? Why hesitate now? My spear is in the holster beneath my arm, my dirk in my waistband. The black leather rune-covered pouch holding the three stones the Ellen wants. 3/4 of what we all hope will form some kind of cage for the Shisadu, are tucked securely in my backpack, which hangs over my shoulder. Shapes glide from the darkness. The LM and the last two unseely printed. Jack and Rainy Lane are not with them. That would disturb me, except the Mac who loves her parents was in those pieces I left behind with Baron's body. Baron's is dead. It's my fault. I have no parents, no love, no weaknesses. There's not a single shaft of sunshine in my soul. I feel immeasurably lighter, stronger. Darok. I will no longer call him the LM. Even the abbreviation of his smug-ass title implies superiority. Has been eating a great deal of unseelie flesh. Power is thick in the air between us. I'm not sure what comes from him and what is rolling off me. I wonder how his minions feel about him cannibalizing their own. Perhaps what is an abomination to the light court is a common vice at the dark court, an acceptable hazard of being unseelie. As he approaches the circle of silvery light in which I stand, his eyes widen infinitesimally. I laugh, a throaty purr. I know what I look like. I washed after leaving Baron's and prepared myself with care. My bra is in my backpack. My hair is softly curled and wild around my face. It took time to get the black stain off my palms. There is nothing about me that is not a weapon, an asset, something to use to get what I want, including my body. I've learned a thing or two from Baron's. Power is sexy. It shapes my spine, infuses my beckoning hand. I have not been devastated by Baron's death. The alchemy of grief has forged a new metal. I have been transformed. There's only one way I can make his death okay. Undo it. And while I'm at it, undo Alina's too. Every person I've met who's known something about the Shisadu was cryptic about it. No one has been willing to tell me exactly what's in it. The only thing everyone kept telling me was that it was imperative I find it, and quickly, because it could be used to keep the walls from crashing. Well, the walls are down now. It's too late. Considering that I've been hunting this book with single-minded dedication for months, it's startling how little thought I've given to its contents. I swallowed what I was told and obediently chased it. I suspect now that everyone was keeping me tightly focused on the goal of finding it in order to keep the walls up, so I'd never get around to thinking too hard about other possible uses for the Shisadu. There I was, hunting an object of unspeakable power, surrounded by people that wanted it for reasons of their own, and never once did I think, wait a minute, what might it do for me? Darok told me that with the Shisadu he could bring Alina back. He said he wanted it to reclaim his fey essence and exact revenge. Valaine told me that the Dark Book holds all the Unseelie King's knowledge, every last damnable bit of it. He said he wants it for the Seelie Queen, so she might use it to restore their race to their former glory and to re-imprison the Unseelie. He believes it contains fragments of the Song of Making, lost to their race so long ago, and that the Queen will be able to use them to recreate the ancient melody. I don't know exactly what the Song of Making is or does, but it seems to be the ultimate in Fey power. It was Baron's that told me the most. He said the Shisadu contains spells to make and unmake worlds. Something to do with those fragments of the song. He never would tell me why he wanted it. Said he was a book collector. Right. And I'm the Unseelie King. Lying there, holding Baron's body, I'd contemplated the Shisadu's potential uses for the first time in a very personal way. Especially the part about making and unmaking worlds. It had all become perfectly clear to me. With the Shisadu, a person could create a world with a different past and a different future. Essentially, a person could turn back time, erase anything they didn't like, replace those things they couldn't bear to have lost, including people they couldn't stand to live without. I'd torn myself away from Baron's body with one purpose, to get the Shisadu. And when I did, I wasn't turning it over to anyone. It was going to be mine. I would study it. Grief had focused me like a laser. I could learn anything. Nothing would stand in my way. I would rebuild the world the way I wanted it. Come! I smile. Join me. My face radiates only warmth, invitation, pleasure at his presence. I am the last thing he expected. He believed he would find a terrorized, hysterical girl. I'm not and never will be again. He motions the princes back and takes a casual step forward, but I see the studied grace in the movement. He is wary of me. He should be. Coppery Fey eyes meet mine. How did Alina fail to see that those eyes were not human, no matter how human his body appeared? The answer is simple. She did. She knew. That was why she lied to him, told him that she didn't have any family, that she was an orphan, protected us from the very first. She knew there was something dangerous about him, and she wanted him anyway, wanted to taste that kind of life. I don't blame her. We are flawed. We should have been banned from Ireland for everyone's good. He assesses me. I know he passed Baron's body. He's trying to figure out what happened, but is unwilling to ask. I suspect nothing could have convinced him more surely than seeing Baron's dead that the Michaela he thought he was dealing with wasn't home anymore. His gaze drops to the thin, jagged-edged, silvery runes on the ground encircling me, bathing me in cool, eerie light. His eyes widen again as he scans them, and for the briefest of instants, he looks rattled.
Nice work.
His gaze flicks between the runes and my face.
What are they?
You don't recognize them? I counter. I sense deception. He knows what they are. I don't. I'd like to. The next thing I know, his copper eyes lock with mine, and a vibrant blue-black light blazes from his fist. I hadn't even seen him reach inside his shirt for the halo.
Step out of the circle, now,
he commands. He's not using voice. He's holding the amulet, one of the four Unseelie Hallows, an ornate necklace that houses a fist-sized stone of inexplicable composition. The king created it for his concubine to enable her to bend reality to her whim. The amulet reinforces an epic person's will. Months ago, I sat at a very exclusive auction in an underground bomb shelter and watched an old Welshman pay in excess of 8 figures for it. He'd had stiff competition. Malouche had murdered the old man and taken it before Barons and I had been able to steal it, but the wannabe vamp couldn't use it. Derok can. I believe I could, too, if I can get it from him. I held it once, and it responded to me. But like many things fey, time imbued it with a degree of sentience, and it had sought something from me. A binding or pledge? I'd not understood, or if I had, hadn't been willing to make it, afraid of what it would cost me. I'd lost the halo to Derok when he'd voiced me into turning it over, before I learned to use voice myself. I'd have no compunction about exploring the amulet's desires now. No price is too high. I feel the blue-black power it radiates, lacing his command with compulsion. The pressure is immense. I want to leave the circle. I could breathe, eat, sleep, live without pain forever if only I would leave the circle. I laugh. Throw me the amulet now! Voice explodes from me. The heads of the Unseelie princes swivel and they regard me. It's hard to tell with them, but I think they suddenly find me very interesting. A chill runs up my spine. There is no fear, no terror left inside me. Yet those things, those icy, unnatural aberrations, they still manage to affect me. I have not looked directly at them yet. Derok's hand tightens on the blazing amulet.
Step out of the circle.
The pressure is crushing. It can be eased only by obeying. Throw me the amulet! He flinches, raises his hand, snarls and jerks it back down. For the next few minutes, he and I each try to bend the other to our will, until we are finally forced to concede that we are at an impasse. My voice does not work on him. Neither amulet nor voice works on me. We are matched. Fascinating. I am his equal. Oh, my, what a creature I've become. He circles me, and I turn with him, a faint smile curving my lips, my eyes alight. I am charged. I am exhilarated. I'm pumped on the power of my runes and myself. We study each other as if confronting a new species. I offer my hand, an invitation to step to my side. He looks down at the runes.
I am not that great a fool.
His voice is deep, musical. He is beautiful. I understand why my sister wanted him. Tall, golden-skinned, there is an otherworldly eroticism to him that being made mortal by his queen did not eradicate. The scar on his face draws the eye, begs the finger to trace it, to learn the story behind it. I cannot ask how great a fool, because it would betray that I don't know what my runes are.
What happened to Barons?
He says after a time. I killed him. He searches my face, and I know he is trying to come up with any scenario that might explain the way Barons was mutilated and killed. If he examined the body, he saw the spear wound, and he knows I carry it. He knows I stabbed him at least once.
Why?
I wearied of his incessant boorishness. I wink. Let him think me mad. I am, in every sense of the word.
I didn't think he could be killed. The Fae have long feared him.
Turns out the spear was his weakness. It's why he never wanted to touch it. He absorbs my words, and I know he's trying to decide why a Fae weapon could kill Jericho Barons. I'd like to know, too. Was it the spear that dealt the killing blow? Would he have died of that wound eventually, regardless of whether Riordan had slit his throat?
Yet he armed you with it. You expect me to believe that?
Like you, he thought I was all fluff and no teeth. Too stupid to be worth suspicion. Lamb to the slaughter was how he liked to phrase it. Little lamb killed the lion. Guess I showed him, huh? I wink again.
I burned his body. There is nothing left but ash.
He watches my face carefully. Good.
If there was any way he might rise, he never will now. The princes scattered his ashes to 100 dimensions.
His gaze is piercing now. I should have thought of that myself. Thank you for finishing it so well. My mind is on the new world I plan to create. I've said goodbye to this one. Copper eyes narrow, glittering with scorn.
You didn't kill Barons. What happened? What are you playing at?
He betrayed me, I lie.
How?
It's none of your business. I had my reasons. I watch him watch me. He wonders if the rape of the Unseelie Princess and my time in the Hall of All Days has unhinged me. He wonders if I'm unbalanced enough to have gone crazy and actually killed Barons for pissing me off. When he glances down at the runes again, I know he thinks I have enough juice to have pulled it off.
Step out of the circle. I have your parents and will kill them if you don't obey me.
I don't care. I scoff. He stares. He heard the truth in my words. I don't care. An essential part of me is dead. I don't mourn it. This is no longer my world. What happens here doesn't matter. In this reality, I'm already on borrowed time. I will rebuild a new one or die trying. I'm free, Darok. I'm really, truly free. I shrug my shoulders, toss my head, and laugh. He sucks in a sharp breath when I say his name and laugh, and I know that I've reminded him of my sister. Did she say those words to him once? Does he hear joy in my laughter as he once heard in hers? He stalks a tight circle around me, eyes narrowed.
What changed? In the days since I abducted your parents and today, what happened to you?
What happened to me started happening a long time ago. You should have kept Alina alive. I hated you for that.
And now?
I look him up and down. Now is different. Things are different. We are different. His eyes search mine, left to right and back again rapidly.
What are you saying?
I see no reason we cannot be friends. He tries the word.
Friends.
I nod. He contemplates the possibility that I am sincere. A human would never entertain the notion. Fae are different. No matter how much time they spend among us, they just can't nail the subtleties of human emotion. It's that difference I'm counting on. When I left Barons, all I wanted was to lay in wait for Darok, use my runes and my newfound dark, glassy friend to kill him the moment he appeared. I exercised it swiftly. This ex-fae turned human knows more about both the Seelie and Unseelie courts, and the book that I am determined to possess, than anyone. When he has told me everything he knows, I'll relish killing him. I'd considered allying myself with Villain, and when I'm done taking everything I need from Darok, I still may. After all, I'll need the fourth stone. But Villain doesn't seem to have any real knowledge about the book, aside from a few old legends. It's a better bet that the Unseelie know more about the Dark Book than the Seelie Queen's right hand. Maybe even where to find the prophecy. Like Barons, Darok has actually seen pages of the Arcane Tome. I was forced to concede that hunting the Shisadu was an exercise in futility until I discovered how to control it. But Darok has never stopped his search. Why? What does he know that I don't? The sooner I pry his secrets from him, the sooner I learn to contain and use the Shisadu, the sooner I can stop living in this agonizing reality that I will have no hesitation about destroying to replace with my world. The right one, where everything ends happily ever after.
Friends work toward common goals,
he says. Like hunting books, I agree.
Friends trust each other. They don't barricade each other out.
He looks at my feet. The runes came from within me. I am my circle. He doesn't know this. I kick them aside. I wonder if he has forgotten my spear. As heavily laced with Unseelie as he is, a single prick would sentence him to the same slow, gruesome death that Malush suffered. When I step out, he slowly looks me up and down. I see the thoughts that flash through his eyes as they travel over my body. Kill her, fuck her, assault and bind her, explore her uses. It takes a lot to make a man kill a beautiful woman he has not yet slept with, especially if he enjoyed her sister. Friends don't try to coerce each other, I say with a pointed look at the amulet. He inclines his head and slips it back inside his shirt. I offer my hand with a smile. Barons taught me well. Keep your friends close. Darok takes it, leans down to place a light kiss upon my lips. The tension between us is a palpable thing. One sudden move from either of us, and we'll be all over each other, trying to kill each other, and we know it. He keeps his body pliant. I infuse my limbs with languor. We are two scorpions with coiled tails, trying to mate. It is no more than I deserve, the punishment of letting him touch me like this. I sentenced Barons to death. I part my lips beneath his, but demurely, teeth standing guard. I exhale a soft whisper of a breath into his mouth. He likes it. And your enemies closer. Behind us, the Unseelie princes begin to chime softly like dark crystal. I remember that sound. I know what it precedes. I tighten my hand on his. Never them. Never again. Darok turns to them and barks a harsh command in a language that hurts my ears. They vanish. The moment I no longer know where they are, whether they might be closing in on me, I reach for my spear. It is gone, too. The Unseelie princes cannot sift within the silvers with any predictability. Darok tells me it's a crapshoot every time they try. Cruces curse again, screwing things up. I tell him the stones are no better, that whatever dimension I'm in tries to expel them once uncovered, in an effort to return the rune-covered blue-black stones to the cliffs of the icy Unseelie prison from whence they were chiseled. I'm surprised he doesn't know this and tell him so.
You do not understand what life is like at the Seely Court, Makayla. Those with true knowledge, true memories of our past, guard it zealously. There are as many versions of the old days and conflicting tales of our origins as there are dimensions to choose from within the hall. The only Unseely we ever saw were those we battled the day the king and queen fought, and the king slew our queen. Since then, we have drunk from the cauldron countless times.
He moves along the cliff's edge with unnatural fluidity and grace. Fae move like sleek, kingly predators, born of the sure knowledge that they can never die, or at least very rarely and only under special circumstances. He hasn't lost that arrogance, or perhaps he's reclaimed it from all the Unseely he's been eating. He's not wearing the crimson robes that once terrified me. Tall, gracefully muscled, he's dressed like an outdoorsman in a Versace ad, with a long fall of moon-silvered hair secured at his nape. He's undeniably sexy. In his power and confidence, he reminds me of barons. I don't ask why they drink. I understand. If I found the cauldron and drank from it, it would erase all pain and allow me to start life over, a blank slate. I couldn't grieve for what I didn't remember ever having. That they drink implies that on some level the Fae feel, if not pain, at least significant discomfort. So how are we going to get out of here? I ask. His reply gives me a sudden chill, a sense of something.